League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello and welcome back to The Game's Gone Mad with me, Pete. This week's episode is brought to you by Harry's Razors, and as always, we'll be covering the biggest footballing news and gossip from around the world, meaning today we're discussing whether it's time for Potch to call it quits at Spurs, how Man United can fix their goal-scoring woes, and why Cristiano Ronaldo is a very, very salty boy. The Game's Gone Mad. Joining me again, as always, is Patrick Van Straten. Pat, how are we doing?
Mean boys for life.
Well, to be fair, Corporate Dave was meant to join us today, but he pulled out last minute, literally 10 minutes ago.
Not a mean boy.
I keep getting rejected by blokes. This must be how Olivia Dodd feels.
Oh, let's make sure we send this to her. R.I.P. The game's gone.
So before we get into our first section, the lovely people over at Harry's Razors sent us over some swag, and given what I'm assuming your unwillingness to part with your beard, Patrick, I took these ones for myself and gave them a try. And in the trial set that they sent me, you got a razor in the famous Harry's Orange, a razor blade, shaving foam, and a travel cover. And to be honest, pretty impressed with the shave. Now, I actually gave up like wet shaving about a year and a half ago because I kept getting like spots and like ingrown hairs and all, and it just wasn't worth it.
It's a skill that you have to cultivate. You either have to do it all the time or never.
But like, I was shaving, wet shaving all the time, but consistently getting like ingrown hairs on my chin.
It's difficult. It basically just opens all your pores up, right? And then you're just like, they just get like dirty.
Because it was happening so consistently, I was like, I'm just moving to something else. Like, I'm sacking it off. But Harry's Razors, been using them since they sent us them last week. Absolutely no irritation, no spots. And again, fantastic shave. The first couple of strokes I had when I used it, I actually had to double check that I had taken the plastic safety off it, because I was like, this just feels like it's just smooth rubbing my skin.
It's like, have you ever used like your girlfriend's razor?
No.
Okay, I've used my wife's before, and it was just like, and it's got like some sort of like soap thing on both sides so that it glides really smoothly. It's really weird actually, because I'm used to shaving being quite an aggressive experience.
Harry's also has one of those strips on it that kind of assists in terms of how smooth it is. But like, I actually had to check that the plastic wasn't on it, because I was like, this is doing nothing. Like, I'm just wiping the shaving foam off my face.
Okay.
But it was actually like properly taking all the hair off. And I was like, okay, we're off to a good start here. Also, the foam, the gel foam.
Okay.
Unbelievable, right?
Yeah.
I put like a dollop in my hand, and I probably could have covered my entire wall.
Oh, nice. The thing is, like, when you have a beard, everyone assumes that you like never shave, but actually, you end up shaving far more often.
Mm.
So, like, I mostly use a trimmer for like the general stuff, but I do actually use like a proper razor for, you know, my cheeks and for my neck. So I'd be quite open to this, because I have like a kind of like vintage safety razor, but my understanding is that like they adjust how often they send you the blades, Harry's, based on how often you shave.
I believe that you can choose like a package or a frequency in terms of delivery based on how often you shave. Also, the Harry's razor has like a 5-blade normal razor, but it's also got like a wee trimmer thing, like a shaper.
Okay.
A single blade on the top of it. So you know the way you flip it round?
Yeah.
And then you can like tighten up your edges.
I love that it's like, it's a normal 5-blade razor. That's so many blades.
No, but that's like a standard for these like handheld razors, is it not?
Yeah, it is now. But I mean, the thing is though, it's probably more economical to do it this way as well. Because if you just buy those one-off like razors with like 6 blades, they're so expensive. They're like £12 or something.
Yeah.
So I mean, I do think that the subscription model is probably preferable.
Well, also, Harry's razors, as general, tend to be a lot cheaper than your like kind of standard high street market leaders, because I think they're quoting like almost half the price of them, because again, that is one of the reasons why I sacked off Wet Shaven in the first place a year and a half ago, because it's, it's just so expensive.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would definitely recommend them. And if you want to get started shaving with Harry's today, you can claim your trial set for £3.95. Support our podcast and get your trial set delivered to you, including a razor handle, 5-blade cartridge, foaming shave gel, and travel blade cover by going to harrys.com/gonemad right now. That's harrys.com/gonemad. So moving on to our first topic, and it's revolving around Mauricio Pochettino's place at Tottenham Hotspur. Now, it's fair to say things haven't gone that swimmingly for Spurs so far this season.
Sure.
And that's kind of compounded in their shock loss to League Two's Colchester United on penalties in the Carabao Cup this week. This is literally the lowest ranked team in the competition.
Okay.
What is going on with Poch at Spurs? Is it time for him to just call it quits, move on to something new?
I don't know. If we were talking at the end of last season, I probably would say yes. But the thing is, they've gone out and they've spent a lot of money on their midfield this summer. And they've only really got weaker in one area, which is at right back. And fundamentally, I do believe that this is still probably going to be the third best team in the Premier League. If in a month's time, Spurs were the third best team in the Premier League, quite clearly, I think that we would not be that shocked, because there have been a lot of rough patches under Pochettino, but he's one of the best managers at working out how to solve those. I'm not saying there aren't problems, but I'm saying that I think the problems are soluble by a manager of his caliber.
Coming into this season, I was like, right, there's the top two teams.
Sure.
Then there's Spurs.
Yeah.
And then there's the rest. As in the rest of the top six.
And I still broadly think that come the end of the season, that'll be mostly true.
Like, okay, so far this season in the league, they're 2-2-2. 8 points from six games, same as United. But more concerning than that is their away form, and not their away form in just in this league, in the Premier League over the last two seasons.
Okay.
And their last away win in the Premier League was in January.
Yeah, that's not good.
Right, okay. So of their last 10 away Premier League games, they've won one, drawn two, and lost seven.
Okay.
Right.
But if you look at just this season, their away games have been Leicester, Arsenal, City. Is that it? I think that'll be it. After six games, they're probably 3-3. So those are super hard away games to start the season.
Two draws and one loss?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, pretty lucky to get a draw against City, and I'd say broadly they were the inferior team against Arsenal, but I think a draw was probably a fair result. But they could have easily ended up with a draw against Leicester as well. Like, that was a pretty close game. So how bad this is kind of comes down to how good you think Leicester are. If Leicester end up being really good at the end of the season, then we'll probably look at it and be like, okay, they started the season with like two draws and a loss away at City, Arsenal and Leicester. Like, that's not that crazy. But I understand overall the away form is a problem. However, I'd also say that on the back half of last season, they still managed to get top four and they got to a Champions League final, which was clearly where they were putting all their resources.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think getting to that Champions League final, they were incredibly lucky in a lot of terms. So, you know...
Oh, yeah, they could have been out of sight against Ajax and they should have lost to City, yeah.
Yeah, and also like VAR came to their saviour more than once. They pulled off one of the most unbelievable comebacks in Champions League history, potentially one of the most ever, had it not happened the night before Liverpool-Barca.
I don't know.
Night after Liverpool-Barca, yeah.
But the VAR coming to their rescue, you're like, well, VAR getting the decision right. Like, I mean, that still counts. The
Llorente handball, you know, that was a dubious call in terms of what we've seen given this year. You know, we've seen them given, we've seen them not given. The luck there is that just on the night, the subjectivity has gone in their favour.
Sure, but then you could argue, okay, well, in the final, they get a nonsense penalty given against them straight away. So, you know, like, everybody has... I'm not saying that good luck and bad luck even out over the course of certainly not a cup campaign, and I don't actually think on a league campaign, despite what people say. But my point is more that I think that if you're doing the right things underneath the surface, then eventually these results will work themselves out. And I think they are generally doing the right things. Like, the bigger issue is that for quite a long time now, they've been facing two problems. Well, actually, technically three problems. One is obviously like squad depth in key areas. The other is Harry Kane being not quite the forward he once was. And the final one is the defence, because the defence was always the engine of Spurs' success. You know, they had the best defence in the league a couple of years ago. I think they conceded like 26 league goals, which is pretty obscene, really. Obviously, had an incredible back line. and gradually it's deteriorated, and that's because of obviously age and injuries. But when you have a team who are a good attacking side, but not like a world-beating attacking side, and have an excellent defence, when that defence starts to decline, you're going to see some real problems. And they're conceding, I think, the fifth most shots in the league at the moment. It's like 16 yeah. shots a game. That is a lot. Now, again, the proviso, you know, I'd say this with the proviso that they have gone away to Arsenal and away to City. But and in- 26 shots allowed against Arsenal, I think it was 30.
Yeah.
Was it only 30? I thought it was like 33. Yeah, okay.
So 56 across those two games.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
And that is going to bring up your average by a lot after only six games.
But the thing is, those also those shots, right, okay.
And they're still better defensively
they're,
than Arsenal.
They're good opposite. They're good opposition, obviously, so you're going to concede shots away to teams of that quality.
Yeah.
But the quality of chances they were giving up is concerning because the...
It's like average chance quality.
Yeah, like the expected goals per shot there was middling at like 0.1.
Which is about average for like league chances.
Yeah.
Right? So if you're giving up way more shots than average and their league average quality... You have a bad defense.
Yeah, it's not as if they're taking shots from 35 yards with a like a minuscule expected goals per shot. Like these are good quality chances times 30.
Yeah, whereas I mean, you could tell a story. Like, don't get me wrong, Spurs have a better defense than Arsenal. But for instance, like all the stories going around about how many shots Arsenal have conceded. If you look at a game like the Burnley game, Arsenal conceded 18 shots. They still came out miles ahead on expected goals because the shots were terrible quality.
Yeah,
it's not like. I don't know, whereas they gave up big, big chances against Arsenal, big chances against City. And I don't know, like, that. An issue to me has been just, like, getting their best team on the pitch. Like, obviously, it felt like Eriksen had his head turned in the summer, and Pochettino did what he did with Kyle Walker a few years ago, and what he did with Danny Rose at points, and what he did with Toby Alderweireld for a whole season, which is, say, you want to leave, you're going to sit on the bench. And what he's realised is he doesn't quite have a team good enough to have the luxury of sitting Eriksen at the moment, because Eriksen's ended up being kind of a key player.
Yeah, he's probably their best creative player on
yeah
the pitch.
And yeah, but that would be less of an issue if Lo Celso was fit and Dele Alli was fit, right? You could play those guys.
But again, Lo Celso still creative. Needs to kind of time to bed in as well,
definitely. But at the same time, like, you at least have a very good quality player playing in that position.
Mm-hmm.
When you don't have him, you're in trouble. And I think a lot of Spurs fans will defend to the death somebody like Harry Winks, but then they'll say, why aren't we paying better?
Mm.
And I'm not saying Harry Winks is a bad player. I think Harry Winks is a useful player for them, and he's going to play a ton of games for them. That's absolutely fine. However, and I said this on Sunday Vibes as well, I do think that a midfield which does not have Winks in it, which has Lo Celso, Ndombele, Ali, potentially Eriksen, that has those guys in it, has a much higher ceiling than one with Winks in it. Because Lo Celso can play that six role to better effect. Like, he's all Winks has never put up outstanding defensive numbers. He's not much of a dribbler, and he's not really that great an athlete either. That's not to say he's useless, but it is to say that he's limited in a way that Lo Celso is not. So I think that they probably need to think about stuff like that. Like, this is the problem you often have, right? Which is that fans will say, oh, our team's rubbish, why isn't our team any better? But then if you say, well, I don't know, maybe this young player isn't particularly good, they get furious, you know. And sometimes you just need to say, well, that is the problem. Like, not having somebody of like Eriksen quality in the number six role,
mm-hmm,
is a problem, and not having any right backs is a problem.
Yeah, the Trippier move kind of seems not silly, but somewhat kind of coming back to haunt them at the minute, in that you're having to play players like Kyle Walker-Peters.
Yeah,
in games against Rochdale and stuff, and you know, he is your second, he's your rotation option.
And the money wasn't like so extreme,
like,
that they
mil,
had to say, yeah, exactly. It's kind of a little bit like Arsenal with Iwobi. Like, a lot of Arsenal fans obviously think 40 million is like a great price for Iwobi, but Iwobi's clearly better than any of the left wingers in the squad, and would defend harder than all the forwards we have.
But if Iwobi goes a long way to getting Pepe,
I don't think that's that big an upgrade. But I don't think Iwobi plus like 32 mil is like,
it's good business,
mind-blowingly brilliant bit.
No, but I still think it's good business.
It's fine business.
I still think it's good business.
It's fine. But like, I don't know, defensively it's been a problem. But anyway, my issue is more that what I'm saying is kind of, you could justify selling a player who you don't particularly want to sell if the money is really, really good. In Iwobi's case, I don't think it was really, really good. It was fine. In Trippier's case, it wasn't that great, like, given that they then went out and did nothing with it. So,
also given the current market.
Well, and that they had nobody coming through.
Yeah.
You know, at least with Arsenal, you could say, okay, well, maybe maybe it was a bit premature to think this, but they've got Martinelli, they've got Saka, they've got Nelson, they've got so many guys you can
find. For example, like look at United, who didn't get a backup for, like, or a replacement for Lukaku, but did get 70-odd million for him. I think that's good money for...
Well, exactly, yeah. That's the thing. It's like, okay, if you're going to give us an obscene amount of money, then
probably
we are willing...
Probably paid £15 million over.
Well, then, yeah, we're willing to go into the season a player light. But I don't know. They're already talking about January transfer window. I think they'll probably be fine.
Spurs?
Yeah.
See, the thing is, right, I think on the pitch, in terms of their squad, they're fine. They had a pretty good window.
They probably have the third best starting lineup in the league.
But I think the cracks... I think the cracks and the kind of more concerning area is behind the scenes, in that Poch came out this week and he said that not all the players are committed and that he needs time to knit his squad back together and like recreate that unity.
Okay.
Right? This is Poch's sixth season, right? So say he takes another year to knit back his squad together and get them back to where kind of where they're meant to be. He's in his seventh year.
He's not going to take a whole year though. He'll take a couple of months. He's done this every year.
But I think, well, what? So he's going to go out and, you know, fill his gaps in January? I don't think so.
No, not even that. Like, I think he will find a way to play with this team that will basically solve the issue for most of their games.
But at the same time, like, there are signs that Spurs are in decline and are in danger of going stale under Pochettino, because if you look at their numbers from 2017 to now, they have been gradually declining in terms of expected goals and have been gradually increasing in terms of expected goals against.
Yes.
So, like... in August 2017, they were averaging about two expected goals per game against, two expected goals per game and 0.7 against. Take that to September 2019, it's like 1.2 to 1.1.
I don't disagree with any of this, but whenever I offer an explanation of, like, which I think is backed up by the numbers of why I think it's happening, everyone gets furious. So when you point out, quite reasonably, that Harry Kane is no longer a world-class striker. Harry Kane, since the beginning of 2019, and actually since before that, has been playing like a good striker. Not a very good striker, not an elite striker, but a good striker. People don't want to hear it. Because I get a million tweets when Harry Kane scores a great goal against Leicester, and they're like, and you say that he's only a good striker. It's like, he's taking fewer shots than he ever has. He's getting fewer expected goals than he ever has. You know, against Olympiacos, he's having two shots. Like... at the beginning of the season against Villa, when the chips were down, he got like seven shots. And I know that obviously I'm not rooting for Spurs. I'm not a Spurs fan. But I was kind of like, oh, good. Like maybe Kane, he's had a year, you know, to kind of get back some fitness and have a bit of a rest. Maybe we're going to start seeing the Kane who looked like being probably the best centre forward in the world like a year and a half, 2 years ago. And since then, it's just cratered. Like so many of his goals come from penalties. His fitness is clearly not what it was. He doesn't have the mobility. And whenever I talk about this, again, I get this same like, oh, well, he's dropping deeper than he ever used to and he's doing other things. You're like, yeah, but that's what happens when players are losing it. Like, Diego Costa's been doing that at Atletico Madrid, and you know why that is? Because he just doesn't have the cutting edge as a centre-forward anymore. Now, Harry Kane's actually really good in build-up play, but he's not Roberto Firmino. He's not giving up his own goal scoring to facilitate another player's.
Yeah.
You know, Son isn't suddenly scoring 25 a season.
Yeah,
you know?
Harry Kane's assists aren't suddenly skyrocketing.
Yeah, exactly. So all that's happening is, okay, Kane's dropping deeper, which actually he always did, but he can no longer get the separation required to get those shots off early. You know, Harry Kane used to be that guy who, if he got the ball on the edge of the box with either foot, no backlift, get half a yard of space, and he'd hit it so early, he would just get so many goals. He was a really good finisher in those days because he'd finish all his one-on-one chances, but also he'd get a bunch of goals you wouldn't expect him to because he's just a good long-range
shooter. He just gets half a yard, enough to get a shot off.
And the keeper doesn't expect it because he takes it early. But Kane, I think, has been in decline. And more importantly, the back line has just got old. Like, Danny Rose is still pretty great. The defenders are still good, but they are not as good as once they were. Lloris is not as good as he was. They don't have a right back. These are big problems.
But can that not also be attributed to the fact that, like, it's just a bit of the same old different day, in that, like, if you look at the great managers, obviously bar like Ferguson Wenger, their long tenures, Pep spent 4 years at Barca, 3 years at Bayern, Conte 3 years at Juve, 2 years at Chelsea. You know, these top level managers aren't spending seven seasons with teams anymore, and even the ones that are, they're like rotating their backroom staff quite a bit, every like reshuffling, rejigging everything after a few years. Poch's backroom staff is famously tight-knit. You know, he's got his boys that have been there from day one and have been there, will be there in a seventh season if he's there. You know, is there the danger of the squad just being like, I'm kind of bored of this, and that their impetus just subconsciously drops because they're like, this is just the, like the sixth season of this, and we've won what, one League Cup?
No, that was
2013, wasn't it?
Yeah, they haven't won
anything. So this is the sixth year of this. We won nothing. Yeah, we got the Champions League final, but
I mean, that's pretty good.
It's pretty good. But
they finished second in the league. They've got to a Champions League final.
Yeah, but what do they have to show for it?
Well, nothing necessarily, but a lot of them don't have the option of going somewhere else where they would win something necessarily. Like, I mean, like, I don't think that, you know,
Eriksen seems in the way out.
Sure, though he's
potentially for free.
Yeah, which is a pity, but they've also got really good midfielders. They've got Ndombele, who's fantastic. They've got Lo Celso, who's fantastic. They've got Ali, who I think was actually...
Lo Celso's loan with option or obligation?
It's a loan with obligation, I think. Okay. But it's feasible they could get gazumped. Like, yeah. As in, if he has a really good season, and at the end of the season, like, I do think he could say, no, I'm not going to go. And then they can try and take up their option, and then, like, Man City could come in or something. But it's... I don't know, there's still a lot of talent there. And when you say, oh, we're doing the same thing, you know, maybe the players feel that way. Very few of them have had exactly the same role in exactly the same way for the whole time. Like, very few of them have played the same way all along. Like, Son has played at striker and on both wings. Dele Alli has played as a second striker, a central midfielder, an attacking midfielder off the left. Eriksen has played off the left, central midfield, attacking midfield. Like, everybody's done a bit of everything.
How much of that rotation in terms of position is because they don't have a designated backup striker who's good enough when Harry Kane was injured?
Son
deputises at centre forward because they didn't have a better option.
Yeah, but Son doesn't care why he's playing there. Like, if he's bored of playing on the wing and then he gets to play centre forward, he doesn't give a shit like why that is. Like, he's just going to be like, okay, I get to play centre forward and I always score a million goals when I play centre forward. Like, I'm just saying that I think that they've played in sufficiently different ways, and they've played in really different ways actually through that whole spell, that I don't think it's as repetitive as, for instance, it was at the end of Wenger's time at Arsenal, when people were like, genuinely, we've been doing the same thing for a decade and a half and it's boring as hell. However, I don't know much about coaching, and you might well be right that he needs to freshen up his backroom stuff. And I do think it's been a problem with Spurs for a while that they have not really had the backroom staff to match what Poch is doing.
But I also think, like, even if you like freshen it up, bring in new ideas, even if those ideas aren't good, it makes you, or aren't the ones you choose, it makes you defend your initial idea. So sure. If you can defend your idea, then it puts greater faith in it. It legitimizes it a lot more because you've been able to defend it against an opposing argument.
Yeah.
I just don't think that Spurs really have had that. They've just accepted, this is the way we're going to go. This is what we're doing. And there's been no, like, resistance.
Yeah. I mean, possibly. Like, it's difficult because Pochettino, like, has the advantage in a lot of ways that he creates this kind of cult-like atmosphere where people really love him. And that's why he does tend to ostracize players when they express dissatisfaction with the way things are done. But I could see that also being an issue if you have this kind of, like, homogeneity of thinking, so that you don't have people who are causing that friction that you're talking about. Like, I could see that being an issue. But then that's something for Daniel Levy to think about. If I were Daniel Levy, I actually think Daniel Levy, as much as we praise him for a lot of things, I think he's been quite bad in some ways. In that, though they seem to be, with their transfer targets over the last couple of years, it looks very clearly like they're getting outside help. It looks very clearly like they've got somebody consulting, because their targets, even the ones they didn't get, have all been really smart and have been like exactly who you'd pinpoint
for
them.
And you don't think Spurs' staff are up to that standard?
They didn't have any background. They had like two scouts at one point. They let a bunch of scouts go and they had no analytics department. Like, they famously were really, really thin on the ground in the back room. So at that point, I was kind of like, well, who's doing this job then? You know, it's kind of difficult to tell. And from what we know from people in the analytics industry, it feels like they're like, well, we have it on pretty good authority.
But what's wrong with that, and that they're bringing in specialists?
No, that's fine. But while they've got some kind of pointers from somebody on transfers, I don't think that they've really built the backroom, you know, the kind of club infrastructure that they should have been building. They focused on the stadium. The stadium's good. The stadium's done.
Yeah.
But I think that while Pochettino was making everything work with the squad, they should have been working out how to build the rest of the club up to that level. So they should have been developing scouting. They should have got an analytics department. They should have worked out, you know, a new commercial system.
Pretty much what City did when they got money.
Yeah, they should have
spent
been like,
10 years building this super club.
Or Liverpool, you know, like Liverpool, they were like, okay, right, we've got a really good manager in Klopp, but before that they also had like these guys who were running the transfers, and they said, okay, right, so now we're gonna develop this as well as develop this. And with Spurs, it felt like at a lot of points Daniel Levy, and the fans were just kind of delighted that Pochettino was doing really well with the team, and they weren't necessarily thinking about the fact that Pochettino can't be there forever and that they need to find a way to still be competitive when it goes. Because, I don't know, Ndombele and Lo Celso are just really, really good signings. So maybe it's less true this year than it was last year. But last year, I remember saying that I was a little bit worried.
Well, because they made zero signings.
Well, it was more that I was just thought, if Pochettino leaves at the end of the season, will Spurs be really, really good the year after? Doubt it. Depends who comes in, but I doubt it.
But it's kind of like the squad that Ferguson left for Moyes.
Yeah, it was dreadful. Like the squad,
that squad under Ferguson won the league by like 12 points. Under Moyes finished like 7th. And to be fair, probably it might have been the 6th or 7th best squad in the league at that point.
They got quite lucky to win the league by 12 points. But like, yeah, basically like Ferguson's just a genius. It just was a genius. And I think in the case of a lot of those players as well, he got like the last little bit of talent out of them. And he was pretty...
Yeah, no, he literally brought Scholes out of retirement for the second half of the season.
He was the only guy who could have done that. Yeah. Like, but...
He's pretty much all their dads simultaneously. And they're all just like six-year-olds trying to impress him.
Yeah. And then David Moyes came in and they were like, oh, Jesus. Yeah. Step down.
But to me, it kind of does look like Pochettino could potentially be in the way out. Obviously, there's been a lot of speculation over the last couple of years. He was linked heavily with the United job, etc., etc. Do you see him leaving in the next 18 months?
Honestly, probably, yeah.
Yeah. What point?
Probably at the end of the season. It just feels... I don't think he'd leave them in the middle of the season. I really don't think he'd do that. He's a guy who talks up loyalty quite a lot, and I do think... I buy it when it comes from him.
And also, there's no, like, where he would go. Like, there's no significant high-profile management job that's available.
Yeah, or
that will likely be available in January.
I think Real Madrid will probably be available next summer. Yeah. I think PSG almost certainly will.
I think United could.
I think Juve could, but... I think there are a lot of jobs that could be available.
To be fair, the three I have jotted down and where he could potentially go are Man United, Real Madrid and PSG.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't go to United. That's not an appealing job.
I would say Madrid's probably...
If you go to Madrid, yeah. Or even PSG, if you want to work with Mbappe, and obviously he played at PSG.
I just don't think Ligue 1 is that appealing to a manager like Poch. I think La Liga...
He played there. Like, I doubt that he has preconceptions about it, and he played in it because it was a much worse league. Like, more importantly, I'd look at it and be like, if I win the Champions League with Real Madrid, that's great. I could still get sacked.
Mm-hmm.
If I win the Champions League with PSG, I will be like the greatest hero in the history of this club. And I think, yeah, I could probably do that. And also, I'd be like, I want to manage Mbappe.
But also, the scrutiny under both jobs is high, but if you don't win the Champions League with PSG, you're like... Why are you here then? That's literally all they want to do. That is their only goal.
That's true at Real Madrid as well. Like, I mean...
No, because they have a league as well. You know, I think PSG are kind of done with the league. They don't really care about it.
Real Madrid barely win. Yeah, I suppose Real Madrid barely win the league. But it's... I don't know. If I were looking at United, I'd just think, I can't be arsed with 3 years of getting the squad in shape for a shot at winning the league.
Yeah.
Whereas if you went into Real Madrid...
United will be a grind. Like a proper grind.
But sometimes that's appealing, but I don't think it'll be appealing for him. I could see that being more appealing for somebody like, I don't know, an Allegri or whatever, who kind of came into a great club, kept them great. So,
to be fair,
it feels Real Madrid or PSG, yeah.
Allegri has come out and said he's ready to take on the Spurs job if that position comes.
Shut up, really?
Yeah. According to The Mirror, he said he's ready to take on the Spurs job.
As in that's a quote, or it's one of those things where they like put it in quote marks to make it sound like it's a quote, and then it's like he's told friends privately.
They put the word ready in soft quotes. I'm not entirely sure where their sources are from, but they have said that Allegri is interested in the Spurs job if it becomes available.
Well, so
if
am I. I'll take it. What does it pay?
Well, I mean, better than Football Daily.
Well, yeah, okay then.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Go on, get me in.
The game's gone mad.
So, moving on to our second topic, and this is the story that the Mail are reporting that Juventus' 33-year-old Croatian striker Mario Mandzukic turned down a £7 million a year offer to play in Qatar so that he can join Manchester United in January. Wow. So, United obviously desperately need goal scorers given their woes in front of goal at the minute. Mandzukic to United in January. What are we saying about this? I mean,
I don't like it.
I mean, neither
it's
do
not,
I.
It's not a good one.
Well, to me, right, 33 years old, right? Again, that on its own is enough for United to be like, no. But this just stinks of Alexis to United. This just stinks of Gareth Bale being touted to go to United. Like, United just seem to always get linked. For every, like, good young player United get linked with, they're linked with three players who are in terminal decline.
So you think this is the having been excited by the links to Erling Braut Haaland,
yeah,
you've now been made miserable by the links to
Mandzukic. For every, like, good signing United, I'm thinking, like, right, this would be a great signing. He's 23 years old, showing great development. They're like, oh, we'll just sign this 33-year-old striker who's definitely in decline. Probably pay him inflated wages. Alexis Sanchez, 29 years old, £450,000 a week.
Yeah, but at least
on the brink of decline.
But at least he was actually great in the half season before you got him. Whereas Mandzukic is
not great. Yeah.
He's just a bloke. Like, I like Mandzukic. And if he were free and you just needed some depth for like a year.
He is not free.
You're going to have to pay money for him.
This is the thing, right? So Juventus apparently want £11 million for him.
Oh my God.
And are understandably not willing to accept a loan offer. Because, again, he's 33. What's a loan going to do for
him? Do you not think you could find, like, for 11 million quid, I know that people are like, oh, it's not a lot in the market these days, and there's a United tax and stuff, but that's bollocks. Like, you can
33 years old.
You could get a forward for 11 mil. So, like, you can get a young forward or an old forward who's not, like, you know, this old.
This kind of shows the state that United squad's in, that I'm kind of on the fence about this, to be honest.
Oh, my God.
Right. Obviously, I don't think it's a good signing. It doesn't fit with, like, what I think United should be targeting in terms of potential signings. And it does stink of this kind of, like, stop signing players when they're, like, in terminal decline. Because it hasn't worked, understandably. Like, shock that it didn't work. Stop doing it. But looking at United's squad, they are struggling to score goals. And understandably, because they sold Lukaku for good money, but they haven't replaced him. Right, okay. Rashford hasn't stepped up significantly. He scored one non-penalty goal this year. Daniel James started fantastically, 3 goals in 3 games, but hasn't scored since then. Again, understandable because it was unsustainable.
Sure.
Martial's got 2 goals, and then Greenwood's got 2 goals in the Europa League and Carabao Cup. Like, where is that dependable goal scorer going to come from? Is it going to be Mario Mandzukic? Probably not.
It's going to be Rashford. Rashford is going to be fine.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. I'm not so sure.
What do you mean?
Like, he was. In the 60 minutes he played against... Who did we play last? We lost to.
At West Ham.
Yeah, in the 60 minutes he played against West Ham, he didn't register a single shot.
Yeah, but the whole team was dreadful.
Yeah, but, like...
He can't do everything by himself.
He's got 1 goal in 6 games. Non-penalty.
Sure, but I mean... The thing is, most of your attack has been penalties in that time. Yeah, and also, you look at the players around him and I'm like, who's the creator? Like, Pogba's been out.
Only for the last 2 games.
Sure, but that's quite a big chunk of those games. Like, because Rashford missed another one, right, with injury, didn't he? Oh, no, he was injured.
He got injured in the West Ham game.
Okay, so, I don't know. I just kind of think, okay, where's the creativity coming from? Pereira's produced nothing. Wan-Bissaka I like, but he's not an amazing creator.
No,
Ashley Young's been the second best creator in your squad from left back, which presumably is from set pieces and just cutting back and crossing. Martial, really good player, not particularly creative. Daniel James, can't create a thing. Everybody else in your midfield, garbage when it comes to attacking. So what is Rashford going to do? Like, unless you're like a sort of peak Luis Suarez type player, you can't just create chances out of nothing.
But, okay.
You've got a lot of goals. The thing is, in forward line, it's not just about depth, right? It's also about balance. And you've got a bunch of guys who can all score goals, in theory. Not that they are doing, but then nobody who can actually really create. You know, when Pogba's out, you're like, maybe like a 34-year-old Juan Mata or however old he is, he'll sort this out for us. And it's like, we can't. He's not going to.
I mean, fair enough. Say Rashford comes good and becomes United's like preeminent goal scorer that I'm reasonably dependable.
Out of those guys, he's the candidate.
Yeah. But in terms of this Mandzukic deal, right, the reason I'm on the fence about it is because if you look at United's depth in terms of the quality they have out with those kind of big players. You've got the likes of Angel Gomez, however you pronounce his name, Mason Greenwood, Daniel James, Martial. Then you've got like Chong. You know, is Mandzukic going to add more than the likes of Gomez, Chong, Greenwood? Probably.
Sure, but...
17-year-old Greenwood is an exciting prospect, but can you depend on him to make, I don't know, 15 appearances in the league and get 5-6 goals.
It kind of depends what's happening. Like, the thing is, you can wait and see on this. So if you get some injuries over Christmas, you can bring him in January. Mm-hmm. But by the time you can bring him in, the really, really congested part of the schedule will be over. It's the Christmas part. So I don't know, like, I'd probably see how I came through that and then decide. But I just feel like there's got to be better value out there.
There definitely is better value. I agree with that.
Yeah.
But in terms of somebody who's willing to come to United mid-season to a project that isn't overly attractive.
Oh, come on.
What, just because of money?
Yes.
Well, yeah.
And also you say, like, oh, it's not that attractive. Like, that's if you're talking about, like, superstars. But if you're just talking about, like, decent strikers who are going to have, like, some sell-on value, you could probably get a bunch of them.
But at the same time, I don't think United are concerned at all about sell-on value. Well, in that, all they're looking to do is get in somebody who can score a few goals.
That's fine.
And essentially a stopgap.
That's fine, but I think you don't have to get a 33-year-old Mandzukic. You could probably get a 26-year-old somebody else.
Mm.
And they'll do a good enough job.
It feels like an absolutely vintage United move of recent years.
Schweinsteiger,
yeah, again,
is what it feels like.
I mean, again, Nemanja Matic.
This is the thing. I love Man United being terrible. I love it. It's great.
These kind of transfers really remind me of, like, me playing Football Manager, when you take, like, a League One side and you just go 30 years older, has 50 plus international caps, and you just pick off, like, all the previously good stars at the end of their career.
And you sell endless shirts.
And they get injured within, like, the first three games. And then they just sit in the bench for the rest of the year. This is just what this kind of tactics stinks of.
Yeah.
And
not a fan.
I'm not advocating that is a good tactic at all. So, you know, Mario Mandzukic, welcome to United.
The game's gone mad.
Moving on to our headlines of the week. And the first one is a bit of a weird one. So the headline is from The Guardian and reads, "Man arrested for punch at horse in Portsmouth versus Southampton."
Okay, right? There are obviously many questions this raises.
Oh, really? That does not clear it up for you?
That's not
concise enough?
No, because...
Yeah, follow-up questions?
No, because it's not... He's not arrested for punching horse.
No, he's arrested for a punch at
horse.
So this is a story that a man swung a punch at a police horse before being chased down the street by his mounted officer.
While on board the horse?
I'm not sure if it was while on board the horse or
he dismounted the horse and he was like, this will not stand.
I mean, to me, he swings a punch at the horse, misses, runs away, and the guy's chased down on the horse.
How drunk was this bloke, though? Like, how do you not make contact with the horse? It's
so
big.
Why are you punching a horse in the first place?
Okay, yeah, but that, I mean, look.
Also, right, this bloke is 52 years old. He's 52. Like, he's past middle age. He should know a lot better. Who's punching a horse?
I mean...
What are you gaining from that?
I don't know. Satisfaction. I don't know. It depends what the horse is like, really, doesn't it? But it seems unwise to punch a horse, though I guess it's like... You're at the front end, whereas the back end is the area you have to be dangerous with a horse for many reasons.
Have you stood beside a horse? Have you seen the height of them? They're huge.
Some of them, well, not all of them, but police horses.
I mean, police horses
massive.
Are massive.
Police horses are shire horses.
Yeah.
They're like colossal. I mean,
like, why would you try and punch one? Have you seen this? Even standing beside one of them, the size of their head is so big. How do you miss that?
Well, yeah, that's what I don't understand.
I just think this is so funny, the fact that, right, he made the incredibly stupid decision to attempt to punch a horse. He then failed at that and then got arrested.
Oh my God. But I feel like, you know, before this, I thought that, like, the police response to this derby, I was doing inverted commas there for the people at home, between Portsmouth and Southampton was overblown.
It was huge.
Because they were using riot police and helicopters.
And
drones. So, but now I think, you know what? If a man is willing to punch a horse, then who knows what that man might be capable of.
I don't get this police response. It's Portsmouth versus Southampton. Two completely insignificant teams. In the Carabao Cup.
Yeah.
No offence to Portsmouth or Southampton fans, but it's not Northern Ireland in the 80s. Like, it's a Carabao Cup third round match.
Can you imagine the guy piloting the drone and they're like, what are we on the lookout for? It's just like, I don't know. Like, people attacking horses. This is insane. But it's just, you know, it's obviously just part of a long-standing wave of man on horse violence.
But yeah, it's just a ridiculous story. Like, what's he doing? He's 52. He's 52.
That's the best bit. Does he have kids?
He's probably got grandkids. Granda, what did you do today? I tried to punch a horse and failed.
Imagine calling your wife and she's just like, where are you? And you're like, police station. She's like, oh my God, what happened? You're like, Well, you know how I feel about horses, Charlie. Yeah.
Wow.
It's a good story.
So the next story is a bit more mainstream, and that is that Cristiano Ronaldo appears to be a very, very salty little boy, because Lionel Messi not only beat him to the FIFA Men's Best Award,
sure,
beating out Virgil van Dijk and CR7, but Cristiano Ronaldo didn't even turn up to the ceremony, and he didn't put Messi in his top three.
Ugh, what a bitch.
I mean,
burn book.
This to me just feels like the most Ronaldo thing ever.
Yeah, of course it is.
So like, he didn't win, so he's like, you know what, not coming. Also, in what world is Lionel Messi not in anybody's top three? Okay, I could potentially stomach the argument that he's not number one. Okay, I can have that debate with you. But the fact that he's not in the top three is completely outrageous.
Yeah, imagine like coming up with a shortlist of being like, God, who was good last year? Messi, no, not him. Like, Mane? I just know, it's so weird. Like, he put De Ligt number one.
Yeah.
But he always picks somebody as number one who plays with him. And then Frankie de Jong, fine. Kylian Mbappe. See, I mean, technically Ronaldo's got one over on Messi in that sense, that Mbappe's in his top three. Yeah, and Mbappe does not make Messi.
That is the issue with my... So Messi's is Sadio Mane,
mental,
one. Cristiano Ronaldo, two. Frankie de Jong, three. So the fact that Mbappe... I would put... Well, Sadio Mane's a weird one.
The only one who'd make that top three even feasibly for me is De Jong.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah, probably. Well,
to me, the best three players last year are probably...
Messi, De Jong, Mbappe. Messi, Mbappe, De Jong.
I don't really believe in this stuff. And I think it's so hard to weigh up a striker against a defender. But I would say Messi, Van Dijk, Mbappe.
I don't want to live in a world where somebody can actually say that Lionel Messi is not in the top three.
It is exciting, though, that how many Dutch players are in here. You know, Van Dijk was up there.
They're
and then
all
De Jong
young
and
well.
De Ligt. Well, not Van Dijk. But
no, he's
yeah.
not 25.
Nah,
26.
He's like 27.
Well, yeah. Again, not, but that's younger than both of us.
It's pretty good.
Well, Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Oh, let's not get into that. The game's gone
mad. So that's enough chat about football for this week.
Thank God.
So we're moving on to the section of anything but football. And I've got three topics for you here, Pat. The first one is the 2019 Emmy Awards being held in LA on Sunday just past. The second is travel giant Thomas Cook collapse causing chaos for a number of holidaygoers. And the third is the depressing story of Boris Johnson's turmoil at Downing Street.
Right, well, we chuck out Thomas Cook straight away. That's like something like... Actually, my dad did email me about that because they had problems because they were with Thomas Cook. They had something through Thomas Cook, though they're not really a package holiday people.
But. I read an article on maybe Monday night. I can't remember what outlet it was, but it likened the scenario at Mallorca, at a Mallorcan airport, to refugee-like.
Wow.
Which is outrageous.
What, people sitting in an airport
with
bottled water?
So it was like, handwritten boarding passes, etc.
Oh, my God.
It likened it to refugee status. These people who could not get back from Mallorca.
Jesus.
Or had to wait in an airport for a day. Suddenly they're you know, equating it to refugees.
Wow, yeah. Well, they're exactly the same.
Yeah, wow.
Exactly the same thing.
Wow. So you want to discard Thomas Cook?
Yeah, bin.
Fair enough.
We could do BJ, but Bojo... but I can't really be asked because there's not that much to say. He's just incompetent, an incompetent oaf.
There is a lot to say, but it's also just kind of like, I'm just kind of done with it, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't understand how a prime minister can still be in office after he's lost every single vote in the House. He's been ruled that his actions were unlawful by the Supreme Court. He's lost his majority. Like, what more has to happen for him to resign? But anyway, right, so you want to talk about the Emmys?
Yeah, let's do the Emmys.
Right, so obviously they happened.
It's the definition of a mixed bag.
To be fair, quite a lot of British winners.
Yeah.
Phoebe Waller-Bridge and the Fleabag team kind of cleaned up a bit. They took three awards. She got the Best Leading Comedy Actress, Best Leading Comedy Series, and Best Comedy Writing, which is the first show to be named the Best Comedy Series at the Emmys.
Well,
the
first British show.
Yeah, that's what I said.
No, you said first show.
Oh, I don't know.
I reckon one every year.
the first British made show to be named Comedy Series, right? Okay. So I think, fair enough. Did you watch it?
Yeah.
Fantastic show.
I thought it was incredible. I thought the second season of Fleabag was incredible. Yeah. Like, because it completely changes, right? You know, like, the first season is obviously about, like, trauma and her response to a revelation at the end of the season. And then the second series...
I read that you're trying to avoid spoilers as well.
Yeah. But then the second series, you know, like, it really, as time goes on, it really foregrounds the relationship with her sister. And I don't know, it was kind of much more about, like, that relationship and about, like, sort of healing and stuff. And it's just... The performances are just incredible. I don't know. It just doesn't.
Her performance is fantastic,
and everyone is like Andrew Scott is amazing. Yeah, Andrew Scott's very good. Like, he's amazing in it because everyone talks constantly about how hot he is in it, and I'm looking at him and
he's not that hot.
And I'm like, you're cute, but you're not like hot. Yeah. But in the show, I was like, you're really hot. Like, I get why she's like obsessed by this guy as well, because he just like denies her what she wants like all the time. But it was just
he like dangles it in front of her.
Yeah, but he doesn't. I don't know. It's just
not literally.
But it's just, I don't know, like, there are so many things in Fleabag that another person would get wrong. You know, like the looks to camera and stuff. Yeah. You're like, another person gets this so wrong. And it's just, and also you think, the first time I saw it, I was like, I've kind of seen this before. You know, like, I saw this in, like, The Office or
whatever.
Yeah,
I was just thinking that.
But it's, I don't know, it's perfectly done. It's really upsetting, I think, in the way that actually only comedy can be. I think that only comedy... I think often only some of the funniest TV shows I've ever watched are not comedies, they're dramas. And
it's
similarly...
Well, it's like beautifully tragic.
Yeah. I think in this situation, I was just like, when you're at an extreme of emotion, it's very easy to tip you over one way or the other. Mm. And I think with Fleabag, because it is so funny, there are loads of times where it's like, it can reach a kind of like place of despair that other shows can't.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like... similar with like the American Office, the attachment you get to the Michael Scott character,
right?
In that he's so tragic but so lovable,
sure. In or Alan Partridge,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, in that you know they're an absolute mess as a character,
yeah,
but you like absolutely love them,
yeah.
And then as such, then that means anything bad that happens to them, inevitably.
Yeah, you feel connected.
Yeah,
to
you have a genuine connection. I think Phoebe Waller-Bridge achieves that with the lead character in Fleabag.
And I was thinking about this the other day. I was thinking, like, there are so many shows that have tried to make me cry or tried to, like, emotionally manipulate me. I know that's what they're all trying to do. But, you know, they're trying to make me upset. And then I think, you know what? I've never been upset by many of those shows as much as I was upset by, like, watching Alan Partridge watch his book get pulped at the end of Alan Partridge, which is like tremendously like is really tragic, and it's perfectly done because actually Steve Coogan's an incredible actor, I think, but or at least in that role.
Yeah,
and it's just I think that's what she does really well. It's just perfectly calibrated. You get just enough like sort of honey to deal with the bitterness of it. Yeah.
Her performance was obviously amazing, but another British actress's performance who I think was, it's hard to quantify drama and comedy in terms of comparing the performances, but I think the person who stole the show in terms of this year's television performances with Jodie Comer as Villanelle in Killing Eve, because I think that is one of the not most iconic, but one of the best overall performances across two seasons that I've ever seen.
I prefer Sandra Oh.
No, you don't.
I do.
She's annoying.
I think
she's like her character's annoying.
Oh yeah, her character's annoying, but.
Villanelle is so good. It's such a good character.
She is great.
And she's fantastic in it. Also, like, did you see that moment, I think it's in season two, where she like reels off like five different accents in three sentences, but like nails them all at the same time. And that kind of shows the quality of actress Jodie Comer is.
That's not necessarily true. So, I agree she is a wonderful actress, but I think that to a lot of people, what they like, the way they can tell an acting performance is good is if they're really seeing some acting going on, you know. And I think with Jodie Comer it's much easier to see the acting than it is with like a lot of other parts, because she's so clearly doing different roles, different things. Like, she's so much, she gets to be funny, to be serious, she gets to do different accents, like wear different outfits. Like to a lot of people, I think that's like, they like to see the actor and then they like to see the role and be like, wow, these are so different. And to me, like,
but if you're
like, it's really impressive that she nails the accents. But like, when I was a kid, I used to practice doing accents and I was like good at that, but I knew I would be a horrible actor. Like, those to me are like different abilities. But this is not to say she isn't great, and it's not to say her accents aren't impressive.
I'm just using that as one.
I know.
One cog in a
I know,
impressive
is,
machine.
No, and it is great. But like, Yeah, I think quite often, like, the person who with the showy part, like, tends to get the award. You know, like...
Her character has more depth, I think, than Sandra Oh's.
I don't know if it has more depth. I just think it's more fun.
I think there's more dimensions to her character.
Maybe, but then
I think Sandra Oh's character's a bit conflicted as well, but, like, the background story behind Villanelle is so much more interesting.
Yeah, that's true. But then that's about the character being more fun, again, as opposed to necessarily, like, the acting being better. Like, so, for instance... You know, I think it's just tasty. I certainly don't object to Jodie Comer winning it. Like, yeah. I'm delighted that she won it.
But you would say you would have voted for Sandra Oh had you been in the position? Because I would always go for Jodie Comer. If those are the two options, Jodie Comer.
Possibly Sandra Oh, but now I think about it, like, this is for the second season, and I don't really, in my mind, I guess I'm not really separating out the two seasons.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking at it as one entity.
Yeah, I don't know. I probably would go Sandra Oh slightly.
I suppose if either of them win it, it's not that shocking. But what I did think was shocking was the winner of the kind of the biggest prize, which is the best drama, which went to Game of Thrones.
Yeah, that's mental.
Right, so Game of Thrones final season, famously underwhelming.
Yeah.
You know, probably I think it received like mid-sixes on IMDb overall.
Generous.
Comparing that to all the other seasons, which are like over 8.
I mean, also generous.
What, do you not like Game of Thrones?
It's fine.
I mean, up until the last season, I thought it was fantastic.
It's fine.
But I kind of see this award as a bit of a romantic one in terms of the franchise as a whole.
Yeah.
Surely this cannot be based on the final season because
it
wasn't terrible, but there's no way that was the best drama on TV last year.
No,
it was up against Succession, Killing Eve,
Pose, which everyone apparently loves.
Yeah. It was up against these like fantastic,
Better Call Saul,
up against these other fantastic dramas, and they chose Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I think you're right that it's just like a final season. Thanks for everything you've done.
It's a nod to how amazing the franchise as a whole is.
Yeah, it's like when the last Lord of the Rings movie won like what was it like 11 Oscars. You know, you think. Well, it's not the best of those movies. It's the worst of those three movies.
Yeah.
And this was the worst season of a show which was extremely patchy. I'd say it didn't really ever have one season which was just like really excellent the whole way through.
But it's kind of hard to quantify that because it's got so many moving cogs. So much happened all the time. If you told me like a moment that happened, I couldn't tell you what season that happened in. Because again, I'm kind of viewing it as a whole one long narrative.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As opposed to breaking up into 7 seasons. So perhaps was a factor in why they won the best drama.
I just think Game of Thrones, it's fine. It's just like popcorn. You know, it's just like, it's totally fine. Yeah. Like Game of Thrones to me is like, it's like, I was going to say it's like the Avengers movie, but actually like the Avengers movie is a lot better than Game of Thrones. Like but it's like that in that you're like, yeah, this is fine. Like let's not sit around and pretend it's like great art. It's just fine. Like, it's not as good as Lord of the Rings even. And it was meant to be Lord of the Rings with tits.
I think up until the last season it was fantastic.
Yeah, sure, that's fine. Like, I'm not saying it's like, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it, but I enjoy a lot of dumb shit. You know, I enjoy McDonald's and that's what Game of Thrones is.
But also at the same time, I'm not going to lose sleep over it winning Best Drama. So you know what? Fair play, Game of Thrones.
But it probably is the most outrageous. Of all of these.
Yeah, looking down the big list of winners, it probably is the most outrageous.
Yeah.
The
game's
gone mad. But that is all we have time for on this week's episode. We hope you enjoyed us waffling into your ears. And be sure to leave us a 5-star review and any comments you want to share, because we do actually read them. And of course, thanks again to Harry's Razors for sending us over their great trial set, which you at home can get yourself for just £3.95 by going to harrys.com/gone mad. That's harrys.com/gone mad. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.